The highest places in the hierarchy of civilization will assuredly not be within the reach of our dusky cousins.
It is a commonplace that good historians don't judge statements from past times by the standards of their own. Abraham Lincoln, like Huxley, was ahead of his time, yet his views on matters of race also sound backwardly racist in ours. Here he is in a debate in 1858 with Stephen A. Douglas.
I will say, then, that I am not, nor ever have been, in favour of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the white and black races. That I am not, nor ever have been, in favour of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. And I will say, in addition to this, that there is a physical difference between the white and black races, which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality. And inasmuch as they cannot so live, while they do remain together, there must be the position of superior and inferior. And I, as much as any other man, am in favour of having the superior position assigned to the white race.
Had Huxley and Lincoln been born and educated in our time, they would have been the first to cringe with the rest of us at their own Victorian sentiments and unctuous tone. I quote them only to illustrate how the zeitgeist moves on. If even Huxley, one of the great liberal minds of his age, and even Lincoln, who freed the slaves, could say such things, just think what the average Victorian must have thought. Going back to the 18th century, it is, of course, well known that Washington, Jefferson, and other men of the Enlightenment held slaves. The zeitgeist moves on so inexorably that we sometimes take it for granted and forget that the change is a real phenomenon in its own right.
There are numerous other examples. When the sailors first landed in Mauritius and saw the gentle dodos, it never occurred to them to do anything other than club them to death. They didn't even want to eat them. They were described as unpalatable. Presumably, hitting defenceless, tame, flightless birds over the head with a club was just something to do. Nowadays, such behaviour would be unthinkable, and the extinction of a modern equivalent of the dodo, even by accident, let alone by deliberate human killing, is regarded as a tragedy. Just such a tragedy, by the standards of today's cultural climate, was the more recent extinction of Thylacinus, the Tasmanian wolf. These now iconically lamented creatures had a bounty on their heads until as recently as 1909. In Victorian novels of Africa, elephant, lion, and antelope, note the revealing singular, are game, and what you do to game, without a second thought, is shoot it. Not for food, not for self-defence, for sport. But now the zeitgeist has changed. Admittedly, rich, sedentary, sportsmen may shoot wild African animals from the safety of a Land Rover and take the stuffed heads back home, but they have to pay through the nose to do so and are widely despised for it. Wildlife conservation and the conservation of the environment have become accepted values with the same moral status as was once accorded to keeping the Sabbath and shunning graven images. The swinging 60s are legendary for their liberal modernity. But at the beginning of that decade, a prosecuting barrister, in the trial for obscenity of Lady Chatterley's lover, could still ask the jury,
"Would you approve of your young sons, young daughters? Because girls can read as well as boys. Can you believe he said that? Reading this book? Is it a book you would have lying around in your own house? Is it a book you would even wish your wife or your servants to read?"
This last rhetorical question is a particularly stunning illustration of the speed with which the zeitgeist changes. The American invasion of Iraq is widely condemned for its civilian casualties, yet these casualty figures are orders of magnitude lower than comparable numbers for the Second World War.